Ladies, do you ever notice that certain times of the month you feel like you have no energy, you have all these cravings? Other times of the month you seem to have this great energy, really good insight, your mind feels like it's sharp. Other times of the month you feel like your blood sugar is going high, or if you have reactive hypoglycemia, you're really unstable. Ladies, this is not in your head. Our hormones have huge impacts on our blood sugar and vice versa. So in this episode, this interview with Dr. Kayla Osterhoff, your mind is going to be blown by all of the amazing connections that you're going to make understanding the different phases of your menstrual cycle and how they impact you and their link to blood sugar. I took so many notes during this episode. It was seriously like a masterclass. So get your pen and paper ready, or make sure you save this episode because you are going to want to come back to this and refer to it. And you are going to love the information here. It's going to be so helpful. And I can't wait for you to listen to this another amazing episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I'm Dani Hamilton, and you're listening to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. Our blood sugar affects how we feel at every second of the day and also has huge impacts on our long-term health. In this show, I'll help you understand more about your blood sugar and give you practical tips to help you gain more energy, have better sleep, crush cravings, have clear skin, happy moods, burn fat, and so much more. This show is about taking action and taking your health destiny into your own hands. Are you ready to feel better? Let's do it. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I wanted to just share some updates before we dive into the show. So we just returned from 2 weekends in a row of traveling, which I do not recommend, especially after traveling on Thanksgiving as well. So it feels like we were just traveling for like 3 out of 5 weekends. So it's been a lot, but they were all amazing trips. So I'm not complaining at all, just would do things differently in the future. and especially because between there, Grayson fell, he got hurt. And so it was a trip to Atlanta. Grayson fell the next day that we got home and got injured. Then we had the surgery. Then we had 2 weeks. And then we were bringing him back and forth to get new stitches because he pulled them out, all this mess, and just being up with him, sleeping with him. It was just crazy. And then we went to Iowa, where my wife's family is from. And then we went to New York, where I'm from. So during all this travel, we had a great time. We got to see all of our families for the holidays, and it was really just such a lovely time. But I did want to share, I don't want to sound ungrateful or insensitive, but I did want to share a few things that I was reflecting on as I was staying in a bunch of other people's homes. So we stayed at all different places when we were traveling. And some of the things that I noticed that I sort of take for granted in my house because I can control things here, and that was different when I left my house, was first and foremost the light. So it was really hard for me to be in other people's homes at night because the lights were on so bright. And some people specifically want them bright. They don't want them dim. They can't see, or it hurts their eyes. But some people just don't know. And I am a delicate flower, and I'm very used to what I'm used to. And in our home at night, as soon as the sun goes down, we turn off overhead lights. And then we slowly, you know, we'll dim the lamps, we'll turn on red lights, we'll turn on orange lights around, you know, Halloween and Thanksgiving. I have my blue blocking glasses, so I'll put those on. And so I did bring my blue blockers sometimes, you know, Christmas Eve. It wasn't really appropriate for me to walk around in orange glasses. I just didn't really want to like have that conversation with people. But it feels uncomfortable. Like it hurts my eyes almost to be in this bright light. And one of the reasons some people are like, oh, I totally get it. And some people are like, what's wrong with the light on? And that has to do with our circadian rhythm. And so having these really bright artificial lights at night, it actually drives up our cortisol levels. So it dysregulates our hormones and it puts us at risk for a lot of diseases, which is crazy. There's research out there showing that this is linked to increased risk of cancer and all sorts of things. So it's not that one weekend I'm going to go home and that's going to happen, but that was just an observation. So I just wanted to sort of bring that to light, pun intended, to just remind you, you can get red light bulbs, you can use dimming lights, you can use Himalayan salt lamps, you can use candles, you can light a fire. So there's all different ways to get light at night that are less impactful on your hormones and that will actually be more conducive to more balanced hormones, more melatonin production, better sleep, and therefore better blood sugar. So everything trickles down to impacting our metabolic health and our blood sugar. So it's pretty cool. The other thing were the scents. And I'm so sensitive to this because I take it out of my environment, but the, you know, classic laundry detergents that people use and fabric softeners and Glade plugins and scented candles, I felt like I was being bombarded a lot of times from every angle with all different scents. And that's another thing that I don't feel like I talk about that much. You know, perhaps some people hear it. Maybe it's just something I do in my own life, but I just kind of wanted to bring it to people's attention for whoever wants this information. There's no judgment. I used to use this stuff all the time and Febreze and all that stuff. But these scents, anything that has a fragrance on the label, and I'm not 100% with this, like my deodorant has fragrance in it. Like I'm not perfect about this, but we want to control what we can. We want to change at what we can so that we have a better outlook and we have reduced toxic load, because these fragrances can be any of thousands of chemicals that they don't need to label because of some, you know, industry secret or whatever. And these chemicals can be endocrine disruptors, they can be carcinogens, they can cause reproductive harm, harm to children, and they impact our liver. And our liver is one of the three major organs of blood sugar regulation. And I find that our livers, oftentimes, if they're really overburdened and they're stressed out, they can't do the jobs that they need to do, like detoxifying, like balancing our hormones and our blood sugar. So I say this just as a friendly reminder. And this is one of the things that we talk about in Blood Sugar Mastery, is that we, in Module 7, which was just this week, we talk about strategies to help support the liver. And that includes getting out a lot of these fragrant products or very overly scented products, because they will eventually impact, they do impact our health. And so it sounds crazy, but, and it can be pricier. So just go and switch things out little by little. You don't have to do everything all at once, but just a friendly reminder from my travels. I am so excited to dive into this interview with Dr. Kayla. We met originally at PaleoFX. She was an amazing speaker and she spoke all about the menstrual cycle and all this other information about women's health and how we were absent from research studies for so long. I mean, this information is crazy. And I am a woman and I didn't know all this information about myself and about my body. And knowledge is power. And what we know, we can use to our advantage. And it's really important to learn about these phases of the menstrual cycle, because you can better plan your life and plan and understand your body and understand, you know, when you should put in fasts and when you should exercise and when you shouldn't do those things and why your blood sugar might be going crazy or why you might be feeling a certain way. That's not to say that we can attribute everything to our hormones and like, oh, it's just my hormones, so I should let it go. There's different levels of health when it comes to our hormonal health. And I also want to call out the fact that before I addressed my blood sugar issues, I was struggling a lot my whole life with PMS and PMDD and then PCOS. So I had horrible menstrual cycles. I had so many symptoms and I was like a different person right before my period came. But after I did a lot of work on my blood sugar, I actually was able to impact my hormones really drastically from doing that. And so I no longer have PMS. I didn't know that that was possible. And the only reason why I know my menstrual cycle is coming is because an app on my phone will remind me. On my Aura ring, I can see my temperatures change at different times in the month, and that can also alert me to the fact that my cycle is coming. But other than that, I don't notice a really marked difference in certain things during the cycle. Like, I don't get tender breasts anymore. I don't have bloating. I don't have acne. I don't have mood swings. I don't have cravings anymore. However, I do feel the increased need for carbohydrates the week before my cycle, right? So there's going to be different degrees of health that we're going to talk about at the different points of your cycle. So if you are, you know, turning into what you would describe as like another person or like this other version of yourself that you don't like very much, there's still things that we can do to improve that so that the differences that you notice during these times of the month are less, right? But Dr. Kayla is going to talk to us about other things like certain other neurotransmitters that will shift, or where we get a peak in our mood, or where we might have more mental stamina, or where we might be more intuitive. So there's all these different things that are not just PMS symptoms that we're going to dive into that is going to just, I feel like that brain exploding emoji where I feel just so like my mind is just blown from this information. So that being said, I wanted to tell you about Dr. Kayla and what we're going to be talking about in today's show. So Dr. Kayla is a neuroscientist and women's health science expert whose work has been featured on stages and media around the world. She was formally trained across health sciences with degrees in health ecology, public health, epidemiology, and neuropsychology. So she's pretty smart. And she really is a pioneer for women's health, and she does a lot to help get this information to women and help, because we're really underrepresented. So you're gonna learn all that. So in today's episode, we have so much to discuss. And some of the things that we talk about are, drumroll please, I need to get to my notes. We talk about Kayla's story of adrenal burnout. We talk about the lack of understanding of women's health systemically, why women represent the largest gap in health history, the two reasons why women were purposefully left out of medical research until the 1990s, which is insane, the systems that are affected by the ebb and flow of estrogen and progesterone throughout the month. We talk about how women can be considered four different people over the month. One of these is not supposed to be a monster, so keep listening. The hormones that drive male biology and female biology. We take a really, really deep dive into the four parts of the menstrual cycle. And this is something that I didn't know, and this was the most eye-opening part for me. We talk about the different times in the cycle where we have more or less energy, elevated or depressed moods, where our brain might be slower, faster, more intuitive, like I said. We talk about the time of the month when women's intuition is heightened. We talk about why consistency is not a superpower for women, but there's lots of other ones. We talk about how blood sugar impacts our hormonal health, which was really, really interesting to me. And this is why I find that by working on our blood sugar, we can have these big impacts on our hormones. The three pillars of hormone health, the influence of insulin resistance and sensitivity, and that it has on hormones. So our insulin, not only our blood sugar, but our insulin also has a huge impact on our hormones. When cortisol is dysregulated, it dysregulates our blood sugar, which then dysregulates our female hormones. We talk about why you have to mind your stress in order to mind your blood sugar, especially in certain phases of your cycle, and we'll talk about which phases those are. We talk about when to schedule powerlifting sessions versus yoga or walking. We talk about when to travel, work longer hours, or go to social events, and when to say no to social invitations, take a bath, and get extra sleep instead. We talk about which hormones impact the way we extract nutrients and energy from our food. Like, this is so crazy. We talk about the safe and appropriate time for women to fast, why biohacking is different for women, and why it is more important for women. And we also talk about period tracking apps and so much more. So this episode is jam-packed. Like I said, it is basically a masterclass on women's health. And if you're not a woman, but you have women in your life, you are absolutely going to want to stick around and hear all this information. So without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Kayla Osterhoff. By now you know that your blood sugar is so important to control because it affects every single cell, organ, and process in the body, and it controls how we feel at every second of the day and also has huge impacts on our long-term health. So my absolute hands-down favorite tool for helping to optimize my blood sugar is a continuous glucose monitor. And I am so excited that my friends over at NutriSense have teamed up to sponsor the podcast so I can offer you an amazing deal on their continuous glucose monitors, but also, even better than that, their amazing app and a free month of dietitian support. So this deal is incredible because not only do you get an amazing device, which is going to help you understand your blood sugar in real time, you're going to see how your food, your sleep, your movement, your stress impacts your blood sugar in real time, but you're also going to get access to the NutriSense app, which is so helpful for understanding your blood sugar because they have so many options to look at the analytics. You can see your hourly average blood glucose. You can see your daily averages. You can do experiments on here. You can see how much your blood sugar changed. So you can see the delta. You can see the peak. You can see the area under the curve. So this is for all those people who are really, really into optimizing their blood sugar, doing experiments, and doing those N of one experiments to understand what works for them. But if you're like, I'm not there yet, I don't understand this stuff. Well, it's perfect because the dietitian support is going to help you understand this information. It's going to help you make sense of these numbers that are in front of you. So you might say, okay, my blood sugar went up 20 points after my meal. Is that good? Is that bad? What should it be? Right? And so the dietitian the dietitians over at NutriSense who are trained, they can help you interpret this data, tell you if this is good, tell you what to improve, tell you tips on how to fix things and modify things and just make sense of all of it. So I'm so excited to share that NutriSense will be sponsoring the podcast for the next couple of weeks. If you go to nutrisense.io/sugar and use the code sugar, you'll get $30 off your NutriSense CGMs and 1 month of free dietitian support to help you make sense of this data. So this app, I've been checking it with a finger prick monitor, and you can also calibrate it. So sometimes these meters run a little bit high or a little bit low. And if that's the case, inside of the NutriSense app, you can adjust it. So you don't always have to be mentally subtracting 10 or adding 10 or just having a meter that is just off. So that is another really great benefit of the NutriSense app. So make sure you head to nutrisense.io/sugar. Use the code sugar to get $30 off. All right. I'm so excited, Kayla, to welcome you onto the podcast and share your expertise. So welcome.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah. And I saw you talk at PaleoFX and I loved everything you said. Some of it I have committed to memory, and it just really left an impact on me. And as I was watching, I was like, my podcast listeners need to hear you. So I'm excited that we're able to make this happen. And so one of the things that you talk a lot about, well, maybe you can start with a little bit of just, do you have a health story or just how you became passionate and what you're, you know, what you do today? Let's start there.
Yeah. So I've always been interested in health and human behavior. And from a young age, my mom always told me that I was going to be a brain surgeon. And that must have stuck somewhere. Of course, I'm not a brain surgeon, but I'm a neuroscientist. So it's similar vein, right? I work on the brain, but I don't cut it open. I've always just been really fascinated by what drives human behavior. And especially in women and what drives women's behavior and women's health. And the reason why I've been so fascinated in that is because my family members, the women in my family, have really struggled when it comes to their health, when it comes to their mental, physical, emotional health. They've really struggled. And even when I look outside of my family, within my friends and within my community, I see that women are generally a little misguided and misunderstood when it comes to their health, right? A lot of us are pretty confused because we do all of the things that we've been taught to do to take care of our health. You know, we follow the guidance of our favorite influencer to the T. We do the fasting, we do the exercising, we do the supplements, we do all of these things. And then we still find ourselves not really feeling very well. And, you know, oftentimes running into burnout and having mental health issues and having energy issues and having autoimmune issues, and the list goes on, right? And so I was very curious about that. Why? Why are women suffering so much? Like what makes women different than men? What impacts our health that maybe doesn't necessarily impact men's health the same way? And with myself personally, I found kind of the same issues arise, which was kind of shocking to me because I am trained in the health sciences. You know, I have an undergraduate degree in health ecology, and I have a master's degree in public health and epidemiology. And I've studied all of the ologies, right? The biology and the chemistry and the neurology and all of these things. And so, you know, I've been taught how to take care of my human body and my health. However, in my late 20s, I ended up with full-on adrenal burnout, which led to full-on hormonal burnout of my ovarian hormones as well. And all of that was a shock to me because, like I said before, I was following all of the things that I knew how to do to take care of my health to the T. I was eating perfectly and clean. I was exercising every single day. I was doing all of the things that I should be doing, taking all the supplements, using all of the devices, doing cold exposure, doing saunas, everything, right? All the things that we love to do that are super fun. And I still ended up with full-on burnout. And so I was like, what the heck is going on? So at that point, I was working as a health scientist at CDC, and I was also training as an athlete with Team USA in duathlon. And I had started my PhD in neuropsychophysiology. And when this happened, it kind of put a pause on my life and a redirection. And it kind of put this exclamation point on you know, where I was and what was going on with me. And so at that point, after doing an exploration of my own health and getting, you know, all of the lab tests done, literally thousands and thousands of dollars of lab testing and protocols and supplements and all the things that you do, right? I found out that I had full adrenal burnout and hormonal burnout. And in fact, my female hormones had completely flatlined. And my doctor had said, you know, you have the hormones of a 90-year-old woman. And I'm surprised that you're even functioning as well as you are. You should be happy that you're functioning as well as you are. And I was like, what the heck? Like, how did this happen? So at that point, that's when I really shifted to focus only on women's neuropsychophysiology, because I wanted to find out what's going on with women. What's going on with me? Why are we struggling with our health? Why did I do every single thing that I was taught to do to take care of my health perfectly and consistently, and I still failed? And if I fail at this, then what chance do other women have who don't have that level of education about their health? So that's when I kind of shifted and went down this rabbit hole. And what I discovered in this rabbit hole has completely transformed my life. It has completely transformed the lives of women that I am so lucky to be able to teach and guide. And it's all driven by this this lack of understanding about women and their bodies. And, you know, this is that first major discovery that I had, was that women represent the largest gap in health science research that exists today, meaning that women, since the beginning of time and up to current times, are left out of the clinical and medical research. And that's something I had no idea about until I started going into the research to find it, and it was did not exist. And so that's what really shifted me and brought me down this path.
That's amazing. And I can't believe that you experienced that burnout, but even knowing as much as you did, but I feel like that is such a common thing to so many women. And, you know, regardless of your level of education, it's like sometimes you might know the things. And I feel like I'm resonating really strongly with what you're saying, because I teach people all the time that stress is the most underestimated, you know, and underassumed cause of blood sugar dysregulation. And meanwhile, I'm a living proof that the stress can impact us really badly. And yet I'm teaching this, but it's the hardest thing to walk the walk in terms of that, like the food stuff, I can easily dial in. And I think a lot of us might be like that. It's like, we'll take the supplements, we'll do the workouts, we'll eat the food, but then it's like, well, stop being so busy, say no to things, you know, rest during certain times of your cycle, you know, say no to the social events sometimes. Like, these are the things that are really hard. I mean, sit and meditate for 10 minutes. I'm like, I don't have time for that. Of course I have time for that. Like, if I have time for 2 hours of social media and responding to comments, you know, we absolutely have time, but we're not making time. We're afraid to take that time for ourselves, or we think we're wasting time, or maybe, you know, we're a lot of women, you know, single parents, sole breadwinner, like you don't have the time. It's like, how can we support these women, and why are they so left out? So why are women left out of the research? And you said they were left out until the 90s. Is that?
Well, actually they're still left out even today. So there's two reasons why women have always been left out of the research. And this was solidified in 1977 when the FDA formally banned all women of childbearing potential from all clinical research. That ban remained in effect until 1993, when the Office of Women's Health overturned it and then said, we have to include women in the research. Yet, even today, women are not included because of the same two reasons that got us banned to begin with. And those are, one, women are risky research subjects, meaning that they can have the potential to become pregnant at any time, right? So the risk is high from an ethical standpoint. And as a researcher myself, I get it. That makes sense. It's actually extremely difficult to even get IRB human subjects approval doing research on women with this additional risk that they pose, right? So the second reason is even more frustrating and also understandable from a researcher standpoint, which is that women are biologically extremely complex because of their hormone cycles and how that impacts their physiology. So because of those two reasons, that's why the FDA eventually banned women from research. But even to this day, these are still the two reasons why women are left out. To be able to do research on women, it takes a lot of additional resources, it takes a lot of additional expertise, and it takes additional time as well as one of those resources that it requires, because we have to consider our hormone-related biochemistry, neurology, and physiology, and how it shifts over the course of a month, which is, you know, a lot to control for in a research setting. So what happens is these companies who want research done, right? A lot of them are big pharma, but there are other research entities. They want to get the research done, and they need to get it done as cheap as possible and as quickly as possible. And so the only way to do cheap, quick research is to only include men. And so that's what is being done.
Wow. That is really alarming and startling. So in addition to our hormones being different, what else is there, like a cognitive difference that women have as well?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, maybe we can talk about these hormonal differences that really have this global effect on our cognition, on our respiratory system, our cardiovascular system, our immune system, our musculoskeletal system, our nervous system, our metabolism. Literally every part of us is impacted by the ebb and flow of estrogen and progesterone across the month. And so this is why I say that women are actually four different people over the course of a month, because we go through four different significant hormonal shifts, and each one of those has its own biochemical, neurochemical, and physiological signature. And so that's why we are such extremely difficult research subjects, because we're not just one subject. We're a changing subject. We change significantly four times over the course of a month, and that really absolutely has to be considered. In the research that is properly done, including women, they have to delineate the data by hormonal phase. Otherwise, the results are not accurate. Now, the amount of research that is doing that is extremely, extremely, extremely tiny. That actually include women in the appropriate numbers that they should be including women. And then of those research studies, which are tiny in and of themselves, maybe about 200 studies that I've gone back and collected over the past 6 years that appropriately include women, of those handful of studies, the ones that actually delineate the findings by hormonal phase are a tiny fraction. So we're looking at a huge gap in the information flow that is required for women to be able to, first of all, understand their own bodies, and secondly, for our health professionals to be properly educated and to guide women properly about their health. None of this is happening. Even when we look at our biological textbooks, we are looking at education that is created around data that comes from male-centric research. So even what we're taught about our biology is not fully accurate for women. So it's a huge problem that stems out into so many areas, and it all comes back to this one key difference, and that is hormones. But I'm not talking about any kind of hormones. I'm not just talking about estrogen and testosterone, right? I'm actually talking about the hormones that set the pace of a person's biological functions. So for men, that is the adrenal hormones. Our sleep-wake hormones, which is cortisol and melatonin, are what drive the male biology and set the pace of the male physiology. So what that means is that the male biology operates on a 24-hour repeating clock. So day in and day out, men are very, very consistent. Essentially, they are, you know, the same person every day. There are small, very small changes that happen over big, long periods of time throughout the lifespan. And that's the case for women as well. But from day to day, men are physiologically, biologically consistent, right? Very predictable, which is nice, which is really great for research. Now, when it comes to us ladies, things are a lot more complex. And that's because we have a very different biological rhythm that is set to the pace of two other hormones, which is estrogen and progesterone. So for us ladies, yes, we still have that same sleep-wake cycle of cortisol and melatonin, that 24-hour repeating circadian rhythm. However, these are not the hormones that set the pace of our global biology and determine, for instance, our respiratory function, our cardiovascular function, our brain function, our metabolism, all of those things, right? What sets the pace of our biology as women is the ovarian hormones, estrogen and progesterone. And as we know, those two hormones change over the course of a month significantly four times. And that's why, physiologically speaking, women are four different women over the course of a month. And so this has major repercussions for every aspect of our lives and our health. When you look out into society, you see that we have created a society, an infrastructure, an environment, systems, constructs around a 24-hour repeating system. Because why? Because that's the data that we have, right? The data that we have to base our decisions on is a data set that is very much male-centric. It's not including women, and it's not including women's data. So of course, this is how we have designed the world. And even when we look at our health, when we look at the health recommendations that come out from our doctors on major medical protocols, that come out from our health coaches, that come out from our fitness coaches, that come out from our nutritionists, they are all doing the best they can with a limited amount of data, which is centered towards men. So all of those recommendations as women, we have to take with a grain of salt, because those specific recommendations are likely only appropriate for us during 1 week out of the entire month. And the rest of the 3 weeks out of the month, those recommendations are absolutely not appropriate for us. And so we have to start to discern for ourselves, you know, which version of myself am I working with in this week, and how do I make my health choices around that?
Wow, that is so profound, all that information. You know, women having this 28-day cycle, men having a 24-hour cycle is so different. And so can you break down those four stages for us and tell us the different women we become during yes. That month? And, you know, this is why it's important, just like what you were saying, how we need to think about the caveats for women. So you'll hear, oh, keto is great. And for women, we need to think about our hormones. So we need to change it in these ways. Or like fasting is a really great tool. And for women, we need all these things. So there's so many differences for women. I've had a lot of people ask me, oh, do you also work with men? And I'm like, first of all, I work with everybody. I don't know. I must just attract women to me. Like, maybe people think I'm girly. I don't know. Maybe because I had PCOS, and I talk about that a little, but I do work with everybody. But the majority of people who I work with happen to be women. And I'm like, men are easy. Like, they don't have those pesky menstrual cycles to worry about. Like, they're so much easier. So I feel like you have to specialize in working with women. Whereas, I mean, obviously I'm oversimplifying, but like, in a sense, it's kind of like the default to work with men, because that's all the information that we have available to us. And you have to go out of your way to look for extra information to help serve women. So can you take us through those four cycles for not cycles, but the four pieces of the cycle?
Absolutely. Yes. And you're absolutely right. You know, our coaches, our health professionals, even, you know, anybody who supports women in any way, financial advisors, business coaches, life coaches, we all deserve to have this information so that we can properly support women. And so that's why I'm out here doing this work and sharing this information, is because, you know, like you said, the information is just not available about women that we all need to be working from. So yes, let's talk about the four different women that we all are over the course of a month, which is actually quite magical. Once you can learn these four versions of yourself and learn how to navigate and align your lifestyle with all four versions of you, your life really does become magical. It's basically like the ultimate biohack that the other half of the population does not have access to. So phase one is the menstrual phase. And this is the first woman that we're going to talk about. And this phase is unfortunately the only one that most women are aware that they have. So typically, you know, women know I either am on my period or I'm not on my period, right? And that's about the extent of the education that we get, you know, elementary school through 12th grade. That's about the extent of it. It's like, you have a menstrual cycle and you're going to have a period. And then, you know, when you're not having your period, it's the rest of the time. But it's so much more complex than that. So phase one is when you are menstruating. So it's when you're having that period. It's about week one of that month long, what I call a biological rhythm or a biorhythm. And remember, the menstrual cycle is the centerpiece of the female biorhythm, but it is not the female biorhythm in and of itself. It's just the driving force of it. So in phase one, it's the menstrual phase. This is when those two key hormones are at their lowest level in comparison to the rest of the month. So estrogen and progesterone are at their very lowest level during this phase. During this low hormonal phase, what that translates into physiologically is a kind of global slowing of processes. And what I mean by that is our metabolism and our metabolic function slows down during this phase when those two hormones are lower. And this actually translates to a slower and different conversion of our macros, right? So our carbs, fats, and proteins into acetyl-CoA and through the citric acid cycle, ending up in ATP, which is energy for the cells. So that whole system slows down. So women have less access to ATP. We have less energy during this phase. What we also see is when we shift over to what's going on neurologically, we see that we have lower levels of key neurotransmitters in our brain, or lower activity of the neurotransmitters that are involved in excitatory and mood boosting mechanisms. So we're talking about serotonin, dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine, and glutamate. So less activity of those neurotransmitters. So a lot of women will report having, you know, a little bit of brain fog during this time. And it may actually not be brain fog. It just may be that you are not understanding that you have a little less resources to work with during this time, and you may be burning through them faster than what you need to be. So really, you know, every phase is all about understanding what your biological needs are, understanding where your resources are, how many of them you have, and allocating them appropriately so that you don't end up in burnout, right? Burnout is you've run through your resources and now you are putting extra demands on your body that cannot be withheld, right? So phase one sounds kind of like a bummer, right? It sounds like we're getting less energy. We're getting our brain function is kind of slowing during this time. We have less resources to work with. But it's actually absolutely brilliant and beautifully designed, the whole female biological rhythm. Because in phase one specifically, when we look at how our brain function shifts, we see that with this low hormonal phase, women actually have heightened what's called cognitive empathy in the scientific community. But that's a fancy scientific term for intuitive insight. So a woman's intuition, first of all, is not only a real thing, we can measure it now with brain imaging studies. We can measure and start to understand the mechanisms of intuition, but our intuition as women is heightened in phase one. So think about how brilliant that is. Our body is slowing us down. It's taking our outward focus and the distractions and turning it inward because we have to conserve those resources, right? And it's turning our attention inward so that we can actually benefit from this cognitive superpower of sorts that we get during this phase, which is intuition. So going from phase one into phase two, this is the follicular phase. And this phase is marked by a hormonal shift, which is estrogen that is rising to a peak. So I call estrogen the superstar of this phase because that's the key hormone that is driving the physiological shifts that occur. As estrogen rises to a peak, so does our metabolic activity and that conversion into of our macros into ATP, the fuel source for our cells. That is gets higher and higher as estrogen rises. So as that whole process happens, our endurance, our energy levels, our power, and our strength also increases as estrogen rises. Now, when we look at what's going on in the brain, neurologically, we see that we also get a nice rise in these excitatory and mood-boosting neurotransmitters. So we have higher energy levels. We have more focus. We have more stamina, right? Mental stamina. And we have a higher mood. So we feel more and more social during this phase. And interestingly, because of how the brain shifts in its neurochemical and neuroelectrical function with that rise in estrogen, we see that we get higher and higher emotional intelligence during this phase as well. So our ability to communicate with, connect with other people and understand other people is heightened as estrogen rises. So our cognitive superpower during this phase is navigation and strategy. So if you think about that, how these shifts occur physiologically and cognitively, again, how beautiful is this? You go from phase one, where you have this heightened intuition. So that's when all of us should be doing our assessments. This is when we should be determining how to allocate our resources for the rest of the month. This is when we should be doing our decision making. And then we go from that point into the next phase, and we have this heightened emotional intelligence, this heightened ability, you know, for leadership, this heightened ability to navigate and actually take those strategies and put them into action. And so it goes perfectly from phase one into phase two, how we can kind of integrate this into our lifestyles. Then going from phase two into phase three, this is the ovulatory phase. And this is more of a phase shift than a phase in and of itself, because it's very short. It's only between 1 and 3 days. Every woman's a little bit different, but essentially phase one is week one, phase two is week two. And at the end of week two, going into week three, is this ovulatory phase or phase shift. But it is an important phase to delineate from the others, because this is when we get our peak in estrogen, but we also get a nice peak in luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. And with all of those juicy hormones rolling around in our body, a lot of amazing shifts happen, but significantly, we have this peak in energy. We have this peak in mood. We have this outward focus. We have this peak in our power, strength, and endurance. And our cognitive superpower during this phase is charismatic influence. So this is when, you know, we should be doing our pitches or our strategic partnerships or networking events. If we can leverage this very short but very fruitful time, we can have a greater impact in our lives, in our careers, in the way that we operate in the world. So it is a significant time to be able to identify and then utilize for our benefit. And then going from phase three into phase four, this is the luteal phase, and it's actually the longest phase. It's the second half or the last 2 weeks. And this is actually my favorite phase. It's what I call the brainy phase, which I'll explain that in a minute. But this is the phase that gets the bad rap, right? This is when PMS happens, which, by the way, to me is a lazy diagnosis for any kinds of issues that women are having during this phase. It all gets kind of lumped in and called PMS. However, what PMS really is, or these symptoms, is just a hormonal dysregulation and kind of bypassing these physiological benefits and not understanding these physiological shifts that happen and aligning our lives properly with it. So this last phase, the luteal phase, this is when progesterone becomes the star of the show. So estrogen is kind of coming back down the other side of the slope, while progesterone is rising to a peak in this phase. And with progesterone rising to a peak, some really interesting and amazing things happen to the female brain significantly. So yes, our energy levels are starting to kind of decline as we have that decrease in estrogen. But when we look at what's going on with us neurologically, we see some really cool things. So one is that we get a nice rise to a peak in something called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Now, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, is a neurochemical that increases our neuroplasticity and our neurogenesis. So during this phase, not only is our brain more moldable, meaning that we have a heightened ability to learn, to adapt, to grow, to change our behaviors, to set in new behaviors if we're trying to, you know, quit smoking or change our diet or things like that, this is a really powerful time to leverage to be able to do those kinds of things. We also get this nice boost in neurogenesis, which means that our brain is literally growing new neurons at a higher rate during this phase. Now, there is one caveat to that, and this is a pretty big one that most women are not realizing and kind of bypass these benefits, is that we have to get quality sleep during this phase. And our sleep requirements actually increase during this phase, specifically because of what's going on neurologically. Now, the cool part is how beautiful and brilliant the female biology is that progesterone is saying, hey, no worries, I got you. And it's giving us a little boost in the GABA neurotransmitter during this phase so that we can get better, more restful sleep and benefit from these neurological shifts that happen. And so GABA neurotransmitter is our kind of down regulatory neurotransmitter, whereas the other ones that we talked about are up regulatory in terms of excitatory and mood boosting. GABA is all about relaxation. It helps us to slow down and prepare for sleep. And it also helps us to remain asleep, get restful sleep, and it enhances our memory consolidation. So if you think about how cool this is, our body is saying, all right, I'm going to give you all of these neurological benefits, and I'm also going to help you to sleep better during this phase so that you can actually tap into those benefits so that, you know, you can learn, grow, and adapt at a higher level during this phase. Now, if you think about that in our application in our lives, how cool is that? We have this phase where we can literally leverage this brain boosting ability that we have to get things done, to learn new things, to change our behaviors, to adapt, to rest, to recover. But we have to be aware of how these things shift. Now, another thing to be aware of in this phase that is typically the culprit for the dreaded PMS symptoms, and that is that during this phase specifically, our nervous system shifts in from more of a parasympathetic dominance into a sympathetic dominance. So our stress capacity is lowering during this phase. So what that means is our nervous system is a little more sensitive during this phase. So all of the things in our lives that, you know, contribute to our stress levels, whether it be mental, physical, emotional, things in the environment, whatever it is, they will have a more significant impact on us during this phase. So what does that mean? That means if we are not aware of that and we don't shift our lifestyles and shift our exposure to different stressors or work to increase our stress capacity during this phase, we're more sensitive and we have a higher risk of this adrenal burnout, right? And that is also going to impair our ability to sleep. So that's usually what's happening, is we're unaware of this nervous system shift. We're not shifting our lifestyles to accommodate this more sensitive part of our nervous system that happens every month. And as a result, the stress bucket or stress capacity is being filled to overflowing. And then we're seeing symptoms, which are being called PMS.
Wow. That is so good. I took notes. I wrote everything you said down. This is like a masterclass for me. So I love it. It's really helpful. And I'm just trying to think about how I may show up, like if I can remember different times, because sometimes, and I know, I feel like a lot of women also might relate to this, where sometimes in that luteal phase, it's like, oh, I just want to get my period already so I can feel better, because, you know, that's where some of that like dysphoria and different mood issues really come in kind of heavy for some people with these dysregulations. That used to be me. I used to always break up with whoever I was dating right before my period started. And then my period would begin. I'm like, I had to shake off that fog of this person that I became. So my hormones were very dysregulated. I had really bad PMS. And when I fixed my blood sugar, all that went away. And I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know it was possible to feel normal during the luteal phase. And like you do say, it does get a bad rap because that's where the problems really show up. So I know a lot of people just, it's like, God, I just want to bleed already. And they just want to get their period so they could feel normal. And I'm thinking, I always feel maybe this like burst of energy because I got my period, but you were saying that it's a little bit more low energy. But I think on day one and two, it is a little bit lower energy, but it is a shift from the luteal phase. So there's a difference in feeling. And I don't know, maybe it's the neurochemicals that are changing, because it's hard to describe with just, you know, basic words of like, oh, I feel different. You know, it's hard to put your finger on it.
Yeah. And you know, that's what I find is, when I'm able to connect with women and teach them about their four phases, almost every single one of them say, oh, I knew that about me. I knew I was different, but I just didn't understand why. And oftentimes we're told, you know, to ignore that and that that's not true, or that that is, a sign of dysfunction or illness, right? But it's actually perfectly natural and normal. And when we can understand these different four phases of us, we can navigate with them, and we can allow ourselves to get what we need in each phase. And we can allow ourselves to tap into those cognitive superpowers that we have, each version of us. And we're able to get more done in less time, be more effective, feel more fulfilled, have steady energy, have enough focus to get what we need done. It's really, you know, about understanding these resources and where to put them, how to use them, because they do change for us, unlike our male counterparts who are the same every day. And so they can get away with, like you said, fasting every day. They can get away with keto diet every day. They can get away with exercising heavily every day. They can get away with doing the same things and being consistent. For women, consistency is not the key to success. It is the killer of success for us, because our biology is not consistent. Our biology is anything but consistent. So we have to be able to learn how to navigate, you know, with those changes that occur.
I need to write this down. This is so good. It's such an interesting concept, because I feel like I've been starting to talk about this more, but I love what you said. So I feel like one of the things that I teach in my blood sugar mastery program is I talk about how and when to bring carbohydrates back in. We talk about the cyclical approach. Dr. Mindy Pelz has a new book out, coming out about fasting, Fast Like a Girl. So it's talking about what you should do. And I saw her at KetoCon talk about like all the different ways that you should fast and shouldn't fast at different times in the cycle. So I'm really excited about that information coming out. But I talk about this, how we live in a cyclical planet that changes seasons, and we have a cycle every 28 to 30, whatever days, that we, that the consistency is that killer, because what will help us one day is not helping us the next. And so I think so many people are so focused on, I need the one supplement that's going to help. I need the one diet that's going to cure this. I need the one exercise routine. Like, it's like, no, it's Peloton. No, it's yoga. No, it's this. It's never one. And it makes it more complicated. So sorry, but we're here to help. But I think that knowing this information, just knowledge is power. And it really just will help people to be like, oh, it's okay that I don't feel like busting out a HIIT workout today. It's 3 days before my period. Let's go to yoga instead. That's more biologically appropriate, and it's going to do better things for your hormones and your neurology and maybe just your self-talk over time. So what are some quick tips? I mean, I think that we can start to put together that we should be doing our, you know, powerlifting and things in that second follicular phase. We should be doing more restorative things maybe during the menstrual cycle and the luteal phase. Is there anything else, sort of diet, lifestyle, blood sugar stuff that might show up in these different phases that you wanted to highlight?
Oh, absolutely. And one thing that, you know, we have to address first, which is something that we were talking about with the PMS and with women maybe not necessarily feeling like, oh, that's not how I feel during that phase. A lot of this, the issues that we deal with as women when it comes to burnout, when it comes to autoimmune dysfunction, when it comes to hormonal dysfunction, when it comes to menstrual cycle issues like painful periods, PMS, PCOS, all of these things stem from a lack of understanding how to properly care for our bodies and how to properly navigate with the shifts that occur over the course of a month, and trying to fit our square peg in a circle hole when the square peg's only a square peg 1 week out of the month, and then it's a circle, and then it's a triangle, and then it's an octagon, right? So we have to learn how to be able to shift. We are chameleons. That's our natural way. And that's the feminine, right? It's a little chaotic. It doesn't fit into a perfect definition or category. And it's our superpower. So when we're not in alignment, that's when these hormonal dysregulations happen. And blood sugar is a huge, huge piece of our hormonal related health. So, right, because our sex hormones, these ovarian hormones, estrogen and progesterone, are the centerpiece. They are the pacemaker of our global biology and our physiology. They're important to care for in order to have a healthy biological rhythm and be able to navigate through these phases. So a lot of us are dealing with some level of hormonal dysfunction because we have not cared for our hormones the way that they need to be cared for. And there are two other hormonal keys that impact the health of these sex hormones. So if you picture, you know, female-related hormone health, as a stool, and it's got three legs. If you knock any one of the legs out, you're going to knock the whole entire stool down, which is burnout, which eventually leads to hormonal burnout, which eventually leads to autoimmune dysfunction and PCOS and PMS and pain and all these things that get kind of lumped in under these categories. And those three legs of the stool are sugar, sex, and stress, right? The three S's. These are the big important hormonal related pillars for women's health. So sex, we already know that's estrogen and progesterone. Those are our sex hormones. And in order to have healthy sex hormones, we have to be able to regulate our blood sugar. So sugar is the other one. I'm talking about blood sugar, and what I'm really talking about is insulin. We have to have insulin sensitivity in order to keep our female hormones in check. And in order to keep our sugar in check, our blood sugar, our insulin sensitive, we have to get our stress in check. And when I talk about stress, I'm talking about cortisol, right? When cortisol is dysregulated, it dysregulates our blood sugar, and both cortisol and insulin dysregulation dysregulate our female hormones. That's exactly what happened to me. I had gone so far down adrenal burnout that my female hormones were also burned out. And this is typically the case with women, depending on where they are in that hormone or in that burnout cycle, right? So to be able to manage sex hormones, it's a lot more than that. It's deeper than that. It's not just about those hormones. It's about our lifestyle. And the way that we navigate through our lifestyle has to align with these physiological shifts. So we're adding another layer of complexity, right? So we have to take care of these three pillars, but we also have to understand that these three pillars, all three of them, change through the four phases of our cycle. So the way in which we care for these three hormonal pillars is different in each phase. So I'll just talk about a couple of things that we can do in each phase. And by the way, each phase is a lot more complex than what we've talked about. We've given, you know, a little overview, a little taste, but what happens in each phase is so amazing. And yes, very complex, but there's so much to be gained in each phase. And as women learn this, they will love every single phase. They'll love their period. They'll love the luteal phase. They won't have to deal with PMS anymore. And they'll love every part, not just the follicular phase, which is typically when we all are like, oh, okay, I feel great. I feel on fire. I'm ready. And then the rest of the time we're like, ugh, right? But you can love every single phase when you understand what your body needs, and then you're able to give your body what it needs in each phase. So again, phase one, this is a menstrual phase. The body is kind of like downshifting during this phase. So the key is to be able to take those resources that you have and allocate them appropriately. The other key is to take care of these three pillars. So one, we have to be minding our blood sugar. And in order to mind our blood sugar, we have to be minding our stress. Because we have this lower stress tolerance in that phase, right? Coming from the luteal phase into the menstrual phase, we still have a very low stress tolerance. So we have to be mindful of our stress management. So ramping up your stress management during that phase, being mindful of how you're using your energy, how you're using your mental capacity and focus, doing things that can enhance that, like you said, meditation, mindfulness practice, right? That can actually enhance that cognitive ability of intuition and help you to utilize that superpower in your life. And then going from that into phase two, this is, you know, when we have that heightened power, strength, and endurance. So if you want to do those really cardio intense workouts, or you want to do those really heavy lifting workouts, this is the time to do those things. And it's not going to burn through your resources because you have more resources to use for these types of activities. Going from that phase into the ovulatory phase, it's very similar, right? So you have this heightened power, strength, and endurance. You have this heightened emotional intelligence. You have more resources to burn, right? So you can get away with working longer hours, traveling, going to social, late night social events, right? Your body can handle things like that during this phase and not really be negatively impacted because, again, you have more resources. And then in the luteal phase, the biggest thing that we have to focus on here is sleep and managing stress, because when we're managing stress, of course, that's going to regulate our blood sugar and that's going to allow us to sleep. It's going to allow us to get better sleep. Now, as I mentioned, things are a lot more complex than what we talked about. Even the way that we metabolize our macros, you know, fats, sugars, and proteins, or fats, carbs, and proteins, is different in each hormonal phase because estrogen and progesterone impact the way that we convert our food. So there are different types of foods that we need to be fueling our hormones with, and there are different types of foods to fuel our bodies with because of those metabolic mechanisms and how they shift through the hormonal phases. So there's a lot of things that we can do, and there's a lot of ways that we can align our lifestyles with, you know, these different pegs, the square, the circle, the octagon, whatever it is. But there are different ways that we can navigate through our lives, and starting with low-hanging fruits, like shifting around little things with our schedule, getting better sleep, minding our stress, right? And then going up to the bigger things, like when is it appropriate to fast, right? This is a huge topic, especially in the field of biohacking. And really, and you know, Mindy will back this up, the only real safe and appropriate time to fast for women is during phase one, the menstrual phase. But the problem is, a lot of us are dealing with some kind of hormonal dysregulation, especially during that phase, right? Because we have less resources, so we're kind of burning through them. We're going into that burnout cycle. And because of that, we'll experience things like cravings for sugars and carbs, because our body is not being supported with those three pillars that we need. But because of how the metabolism downshifts, our metabolic requirement is less. And so we literally need less calories during this phase, but also our hormones are not in production during that phase, right? We're at this low hormonal phase, so we don't have to be as mindful as giving our hormones the right fuel in order to be productive.
That makes so much sense.
So there's a lot that goes into it. I know this is like a fire hose of information, but just tuning into your body and realizing that you are absolutely right when you feel like this worked for me yesterday, but it doesn't work for me today. Yes, that's true. So give yourself the grace, give yourself the permission to do things differently because you are different.
I love that. I think that we need that invitation. So many women were, you know, people pleasers. We're trying to get things right. We tend towards perfectionism and we're trying to get it right. And sometimes what is actually right, what you are telling us, is that we can take a day off, that we can say no to, you know, a social event, a hard work, working overtime. Like, these are the things that, like, please give yourself this permission to do this, because this is going to really, really help your hormones and everything that comes with it and your brain and how you feel. So I think it's so interesting, that pillar. I love those types of analogies. I'm a very visual person, so I like thinking about all three and how the stress component is really heavily impacting the sugar component, of course, and the hormones. So it's like these three, they really are so intrinsically linked. And we often just want to forget about that stress piece. And when I say we, I'm specifically talking about myself because it's like, I don't have time for this. I do. I'm not making time for it. And, you know, we're stuck in this sympathetic overdrive today. I just released a podcast episode talking all about the vagus nerve. And so it's like, there's so many signs to me like, hey, you probably need to slow down because it's starting to get to a point where my insulin isn't where I want it to be. And I'm eating well, I'm doing all the things. I'm like, oh man, it's stress. This is what I tell people day in and day out. Like, I'm talking about it, but this is where it's really hard to do those lifestyle changes. But I hope that knowing, I mean, even just for me, knowing when to schedule those things, when I can, you know, get the other stuff out of my system, it's like, cool, green light, do the workouts, you know, fast a little bit more, do keto. And then it's like, when it's okay not to, like, wow, that actually feels really good. And when you know that our biology is set up for these things, so we get to have the benefits when we know when to put these things in. It's not like, hey, you can never fast, do it at the time that works for your body. It's like, oh, I can have some carbs, you know, some people, and do it at the right time when your body is going to really benefit from it. So this has been so incredibly helpful. Do you have one more second to just talk a little bit about biohacking for women and how it might be a little bit different for us? like any sort of things, because I know you're biocurious, Kayla, and I know you're into, I like the biocurious more than the biohacking, because it feels, hacking feels like I need to make changes all the time. It's a very masculine word. You know, I think Dave Asprey coined it, but like biocurious, I love that, because I was just talking with our friend, Kristen Weitzel, and she was saying that she had this really big blood sugar spike out of nowhere at night. No apparent reason for it. And she was just saying that, you know, a lot of people can get really nitpicky, like, oh my God, this is happening. I need to do this, this, this. It's like, or we can look at it and not freak out and just get curious. We can be like, huh, wonder why that happened. I wonder if there's a pattern here. I'm just going to pin that in my mind and like maybe jot some information down, see if it happens again. I'll come back to it, see if it's part of a bigger pattern. So this idea of being biocurious is, I feel like we're zooming out and we're just getting like, oh, what can help me feel better? Instead of that mindset of like, oh my gosh, my Oura Ring score is not good. My HRV went down. I need to do something about it. Like, that is so stressful. That mindset is so stressful. And I know it takes more than like just hearing about it to sort of change your mindset. But sometimes hearing about it can give you an alternative way to think about something. So I hope that's helpful for someone, but I love this curiosity and I love that you, you know, phrase it like that. So anything that you wanted to say about biohacking for women?
Absolutely. And you really hit the nail on the head with the curiosity piece. So what I always say is biohacking is not only different for women than it is for men, for the obvious reasons that we just discussed, but biohacking is actually more important for women than it is for men. Why? Because we have the data on men. And we have really good data in terms of, you know, fasting works really well to increase metabolic flexibility. Yes, those studies show that. And yes, those studies were done on male bodies. If a woman had been doing the same studies, or a cohort of women had been doing the same studies, you would find out that a fasting routine really only works well during one of the phases, and the other phases, it actually dysregulates our hormone health. So for women, an N equals one approach to our health is more important because we don't have the data. We can't rely on the blanket recommendations that are out there from our favorite biohackers and our favorite influencers. Just know that, that is probably really good information for you at a certain time in your cycle, but not always. So that's why biohacking is more important. We have to take an N equals one approach to our health. We can't necessarily rely on the protocols that are even out there in medicine. Because again, what is fueling those protocols is the data that is coming from research that is done primarily or exclusively on men. So we have to just be aware of this. And with that comes power, right? That's knowledge comes power. And then we can take ownership of our health and we can actually do our self-experimentation, which is what biohacking is all about. It's about self-experimentation. It's saying, I'm going to try this. I'm going to track the results and I'm going to see if it works for me. Now take that and apply it to the four phases of your cycle. And now you've really got something. Now you have the ultimate biohack, right? And now you know how to map your biohacking efforts in alignment with your body. So that would be my big suggestion to the women who are listening, is when you feel like, you know, this doing cold exposure every day, for instance, it sometimes feels great. And then sometimes it doesn't. Listen to that voice. That is accurate. Something like that is not always going to be beneficial for you because of how the nervous system modulates, right? If your nervous system is more sensitive, like during the luteal phase, your stress capacity is lower. Even cold exposure, while it is a form of positive stress, eustress, right? It is still stress and it still goes into the same stress bucket, where all the other stress goes in. So if that bucket's already overflowing, and then you add this extra P piece in that normally you can handle well. Well, now all of a sudden you can't handle it well, and you're wondering why you can't sleep, and you're wondering why you're gaining weight, and you're wondering why you're having mood swings. Well, you know, maybe it has to do with those choices. So that's what I would say for women is, you know, zoom out, be curious about your biology, and look at the four phases and align your biohacking efforts with the four different versions of you and with what is required from your body in each of the four phases. And if you can do that, you will have a lot more success with your biohacking efforts.
I love that. I think it's so important, and it's just an essential piece for women. And I love that you sort of described biohacking as experimenting, because that's sort of the terminology that I've always used. I'm like, oh, I just like to experiment on myself. And, you know, what's going to happen, you know, if I eat this ice cream, is it going to, you know, feel good, feel bad, give me pimples, like what's going to happen? And do I want it? Then you can choose, like, do I want that result next time? And so it gives you so much power. And it's not just with like food sensitivities, but also it's like, what happens if I commit to going to yoga 3 times a week for the second phase of my cycle, or like the last 2 weeks of my cycle in the luteal phase? And, you know, what will happen if I try a fast the first, you know, week of my menstrual cycle? I think that it's so good to ask these questions, and it's just so much information that's so helpful. I'm so excited. So glad we had this conversation. So where can people find you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, if you're interested to learn more about, you know, the female neuropsychophysiology, and you want to learn more about these four different phases and versions of you, you can pop over to herbiorhythm.com. And then I also share a ton of free information on my social media. So my handle on socials is @biocurious_Kayla. Those are the two best places to find me, and reach out and find more information.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kayla. It was a pleasure chatting with you. I can't even tell you the amount of notes that I just took. I appreciate you giving us all this really, really helpful information that all women will benefit from, cycling women, I guess we should say. I'm sure there's much more we can talk about. I think that women who, after menopause, they get a lot more flexibility. Would you say that? Because I didn't ask you about that. Would they get more flexibility?
Well, let's just talk about this for just a second.
Sure. Okay.
We can't ignore our postmenopausal ladies, right?
Right.
So the good news is that our biological rhythm, these four different phases, physiologically, neurologically, biochemically speaking, still remain intact even postmenopausally.
No way.
Now, this is what we know through anecdotal evidence. And if you're a postmenopausal woman thinking about this right now, kind of just tune in and you'll be able to reflect that, yeah, I still have these ebbs and flows of energy and of focus and of different cravings or different things my body needs throughout the month. Well, because we only have anecdotal evidence, right, because of this research gap, and our postmenopausal ladies are even more excluded in a lot of ways, we are not asking these questions in our traditional science, but through surveys and anecdotal evidence of accounts of women, we know that they still experience this. So my theory, that eventually I will be able to conduct research to figure out exactly the mechanisms, why is this the case? But my theory is that before menopause, this is the vast majority of our lives as women. It's the big chunk right in the middle, right? And during this time, our physiology is groomed to operate in this month-long cyclic fashion. When we go through menopause, what happens is that the ovarian hormones are passing on the baton to the adrenals. When that occurs, women do not just then become men, right? First of all, we still have way higher levels of our female ovarian hormones than our male counterparts, estrogen and progesterone. And secondly, because our bodies have operated in this month-long way for so long, for the vast majority of our lives, it remembers and it continues on in that way. Now, of course, you're not having the hormonal shifts. You're not having the peak and fall of estrogen and then peak of progesterone. But your physiology in terms of your metabolic function, your cardiovascular function, your brain function, all of those things that we talked about, those still work in this cyclic fashion. So it's quite fascinating. And it's an area of research that we need so much more data on in order to really understand the mechanism scientifically. But, you know, it is, I think, comforting to a lot of women who are postmenopausal that come up to me and tell me, I still experience all those phases. And I'm like, yes, you do.
Oh,
you know,
that's so
you're
cool.
You're not crazy. You absolutely do. That's how your body works because you're a woman and that's how it knows how to work. So I just want to leave that little tidbit for our postmenopausal ladies. You are not left out in this. This still all applies to you, though the mechanisms of action are likely different. We just don't know exactly what those are.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I really look forward to all the research. It's going to be great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kayla. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Okay. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Thank you everyone for listening to this week's episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. If you are enjoying the show, if you are finding it valuable, please consider leaving a rating or review over on Apple Podcasts or that purple podcast app that you have. You click the three dots, you press go to show, you scroll down, and when you see those 5 stars, you can click see all to write a review and rate the show. If you can't figure that out, or if you don't have an iPhone, you can absolutely share it on your socials or with a friend or family member who you think would benefit from this information. So thank you again for listening. Thank you to Dr. Kayla for coming on the show. Make sure you check her out. And also thank you to our sponsor, NutriSense, for being the sponsor for the show and offering that great deal where you can get access to a NutriSense CGM. You can calibrate it to their app. Their app is incredible. You can do experiments. You can understand all this data and really keep track of how your blood sugar is improving, what impacts your blood sugar besides food or including food. And you can also get that free month of dietitian support and you can get $30 off with the code SUGAR. All right, everyone. I will see you again next week for another episode in the new year. I hope you have a lovely new year if you're listening to this live, and I'll see you in 2023.